supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, 'tis the season to keep an eye out for yellow jackets, those aggressive stinging wasps whose underground nests are getting pretty big at this point. But when that nest isn't underground, yellow flying insects going in and out of a hole, say in the side of a house, might be an escaped colony of honeybees, which are tremendously precious. We'll tell you how to tell the difference and what to do if you got either one at the end of the show, after your fabulous phone calls to 1-888-346-9499. Mike, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. This is Mike in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, New York City.
Lower East Side. Whereabouts?
Well, it's in the Lower East Side, so it's pretty accurately named.
Well, because, for instance, when I worked for Marvel, I lived at Bleecker and Thompson down in the Village.
Oh, sure. I'm a little further east of there. I'm on Attorney Street and East Houston, so pretty far over near the East River.
And that's how you tell somebody who is a real New Yorker. They know it's Houston and not Houston.
Yeah, I actually often call the city Houston by accident, so that's how much of a New Yorker I am.
Yeah. All right, what can we do for Mike in Manhattan?
Well, I'm having a ton of black houseflies in my apartment, and they have a bunch of potted plants. You know, it's a small apartment, and I still think I have maybe 15 plants. And I'm wondering, I'm a little worried that they're coming out of some of the pots, but they might just be coming in the door to our little balcony.
Mm-hmm.
But once they're in there, now I'm concerned that, well, how do I get them out, and how do I know that I don't have an infestation? You know, are they laying eggs or anything in my plants? I guess that's what I'm concerned about. It's just how to get them out and to keep them out.
Right. So you say they are the size of a housefly.
Yes, they're pretty big flies.
Okay. Like, if they were what are called fungus gnats, which are in the fly family, yes, they would be breeding in the soil of your houseplants. Do you have a heavy hand with the water in your houseplants?
Maybe. I'm a pretty healthy waterer, I would say.
And do you ever see smaller black flying insects around?
I do. I thought they were babies of the big ones, but I do see some that are really just the size of a pinhead.
Okay. Who are you calling pinhead? No. Sorry. Anyway, okay, so I think you have fungus gnats. I think you're overwatering. What I'm going to recommend to you, BTI, it's an all-natural larvicide. We mostly use it against mosquitoes. It's a form of Bacillus thuringiensis. It's the Israeliensis strain because it was discovered in Israel. But luckily, you don't have to remember all that Latin. All you have to remember is BTI. And perhaps you've even seen it. Have you seen the donut-shaped dunks for sale in like a hardware store that you throw on a pond or in water to prevent mosquitoes breeding?
I think I've probably seen them, but I know you talk about it all the time, so
right.
I'm familiar with it.
And it's also sold in granular form, and the granular form is EPA approved for treating houseplants. Because what happens with those little guys, they are laying eggs in your houseplant soil, and if you did a CSI, you'd see these nasty little maggots crawling in the soil and eating fungus spores down there. And then they emerge as the tiny flying insects. So drenching your plants with BTI and then having a lighter hand on the water, which is good for your plants, period, will get rid of the fungus gnats. The nice thing, the BTI will take care of any members of the fly family breeding in that wet soil. And then to get rid of the adult flies, you know, the truth is there's nothing better than old-fashioned rolls of fly paper.
I'll give that a try. That sounds like a good option.
Now, go to a hardware store, and you just want the old-fashioned fly paper in the roll that you pull out. You know, it's like a product is like 100 years old. And what you do is you hang it near the plants, but then if you can rig up a light source sideways, kind of pointing at the center of the strip as the strip hangs down from the ceiling or something. Flies land sideways, and they're attracted to light. So the first night you go to bed and leave that light on next to some strips of fly paper, it'll be covered with flies in the morning. And yes, it's disgusting. So you just get a piece of newspaper, and you wrap it up, and you take it down, and then you put a new one up. And the one thing you have to remember, and anybody else in the apartment, whenever you go near the plants, be aware. You don't want to get that fly paper in your hair.
No. Well, thanks, Mike. I'll give that a try, and I'll try the BTI as well, because I think I have the little flies also, so maybe I'll just get rid of all my flying problems at once.
I think so. I think it's a good time to knock it all down, Mike.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care, man.
Thank you very much. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Anne, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Anne. Thank you for asking. How are
good.
You?
I'm very good. Very good. I have a tough question for you that was brought about by your early, I think it was last week or the week before, you talked about the moth that gets into the zucchini plants and kills them.
Yes, the dreaded squash vine borer. Now, wait a minute. Where are you, Anne? Where are you?
I'm in media, and I'm at a senior community, and I have a little community garden plot that I share with another person.
Oh, good.
And she planted a potted zucchini plant, and it looked wonderful for a while, like maybe 3 weeks. And then suddenly, one day we walked in, and it looked like it had died completely,
right,
just as you described in another program. So we thought it needed water, so the both of us watered it. And nothing happened for a while, but about, I guess, 1 week later, the sprouts came up in the middle of the plant. You know, in other words, new green leaves.
Right.
And what we have noticed is that the dead-looking leaves, some of them we cut off, but we hadn't heard your program, so we didn't examine to see if there was a hole bored through. But anyway, it seems that the other leaves have rejuvenated on that bottom part of the plant. And the fruit that was there seems to be maturing.
Huh?
We haven't gotten any fruit from the new leaves, the bushy leaves in the middle.
Okay. Now, you said that this plant is in a pot? Is it?
No, what I meant was she didn't grow it from seed.
Oh, yeah, okay.
She bought it at a nursery.
Mm-hmm. And put it in the ground.
Yes, and I remember from your program you said be better to plant them with seed, by seed.
Just so people understand what that means, in when you discover that your plants have been ravaged by the caterpillar, generally with zucchini, it matures so quickly in the summer that you can then still plant seeds, and those plants will be fine because the moth in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic only has one life cycle, so it's not going to be around.
Well, I was in the garden today.
Yes.
And there's white moths flying all over the place.
Okay, these are not the vine borer moth.
Oh, okay.
Looks like a bee or a wasp. It's what's called a clear wing moth.
Oh.
It flies during the day. I was recently corrected about this. And it very much looked like a bee or a wasp. What you're describing is the white cabbage butterfly. I think it's a butterfly and not a moth, but it's a very common pest.
Well, these were pure white, and because I misunderstood your other program, I thought that they were moth-like creatures that would bore into the plants.
Right, exactly. No, they are moths. They are true moths. You take it to an entomologist, he'll say, you got a moth there. But us humans would look at it, we'd say it's some weird kind of wasp or bee.
Okay.
Now, come on, you got to get to the chase here, Ant. Have you looked down at the soil line to see if the vine was damaged? Is there a hole in the vine?
Oh, gee, I don't know. So the vine would be the thing that comes out with the fruit at the end, right?
No, the vine is the thing that comes out of the ground.
Okay, well, you'd have to chop the whole thing off to do that.
No, you just get down there and look at it. If you can't kneel down, you just use a mirror taped to the bottom of a hoe or something. But
we'll have to take a better look.
Now, here's what could be going on. We often say that the first thing people notice is the plant looks like it needs water.
Yes.
Because the vine has been severed. But people who give those plants water, nothing good happens, and if they lift up the plant, it just comes right out of the ground because the vine's been completely severed by this pest. But It's also possible that the plant just needed water, and you giving it water kind of revitalized it. And if it had been at death's door, it would not be unusual for it to begin regrowing kind of a new plant from some part of the vine that was really healthy. Okay. Also, if parts of the vine were still connected to the roots in the soil, the vine can regrow. So what I want you to do is make sure during hot and dry times that it gets a long, deep watering at least once a week, maybe twice a week.
Okay.
Not little waterings every day. They're useless. Long, deep watering. Maybe put some mulch on the surface. Keep the water in and take a good look at the base of the vine. If you see damage, just heap some soil up around the damaged part.
Okay.
And enjoy your zucchini. Oh, yeah, and pull off any really crappy-looking leaves.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Delaware Home Show in Newark on Saturday, September 10th, at the Spring City, Pennsylvania Library on Friday evening, September 30th, and at the Fredericksburg, Virginia Home and Garden Show on October 15th and 16th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section just yet, because we'll be right back with Yellow Jackets, honeybees, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, are those yellow jackets coming out of that wall, coming out of that hole? Or could they be an escaped colony of honeybees at a time when honeybees are very endangered and these wild colonies are precious? We'll tell you how to tell the difference and what to do about what you discover after lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Carol, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am just ducky today, Carol. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I am great.
And where is Carol great?
So I am in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I don't think we've gotten a lot of calls from that area. Always a lot of fun. What can we do for Carol in Salt Lake City?
Well, I grow an organic heirloom tomato and pepper garden and cucumbers, and I was pet sitting, and I came home, and I found True Green had sprayed. and they sprayed with Mecoprop P.
Woo-hoo!
And Dicamba. Or Dicamba, and
oh, no.
I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do to detoxify my plants or any suggestions.
Those are herbicides.
They are. And one of my rose bushes is now dying, which I planted like 6 weeks ago. The leaves are all turning yellow and dying, and that's right next to my tomatoes.
And
they claim they're not supposed to spray 3 to 5 feet from my garden, but they're about a foot away.
Did you hire them?
My landlady did, and when she had them come last spring, I'd asked her to please don't spray anymore, but yet she still did it.
Well, I mean, overspray of those kind of herbicides is very stressful to plants. You could well lose the plants closest to the area of spraying. Hopefully it wasn't a windy day. They're not allowed to spray on a windy day, but a lot of times these guys just want to keep on schedule. So the plants on the outskirts that are closest to, I presume it was a lawn that was sprayed.
Correct. And fertilizers were also put down.
The fertilizer is obviously not ideal, and it's going to compromise your plants a little bit, but that just makes them less organic. The herbicides can just outright kill them. So I would be aware that you might lose the plants on the perimeters, but in the middle, and especially in Salt Lake, because you have ridiculously dry summers, how do you water your garden?
Well, unfortunately, there's a sprinkler system, so I've had no control over watering, and also my neighbor has a sprinkler which oversprays into my area. I used to do a drip system, but I have no control over the watering.
You can't run a hose out to your garden?
Well, I can, but I know they're getting watered once or twice a day by the sprinkler systems.
Okay, so
and I haven't found a way of stopping that.
Okay, when was the spraying?
A week ago.
And how do the plants on the outskirts look?
Well, the rose bush, it looks like I'm losing. The leaves seem a little wilted, like on the outside. They're kind of curling in.
Right. What I'm going to suggest is just for the next couple of days, and if, you know, should something like this happen again, get on it. Get out there with a hose, first thing in the morning, ideally, and try to wash your plants off with a good, strong stream of water. And then as much water as you can use, you maybe even offer to pay for it if water is expensive out there, but really soak the ground. And I think the smart money is the plants in the middle are going to be fine, but they're also the ones who are going to respond. Herbicides are more deadly to plants that are hot and dehydrated. And the only thing you can do if fertilizers like this or herbicides like this get into the soil is flush it out with water. And again, in your climate, it's the ideal situation for that not to happen naturally at this time of year. So the more you can rinse off the leaves, only do that in the morning, and really saturate the ground a couple of times, that, especially on the outskirts, that could make the difference between a plant living or dying. Just dilute, dilute, dilute. Do as much as you can to rinse the plants, rinse the soil, and, you know, maybe in the future, maybe there's a community garden or some other place that you can go to where you'll be safer. But if this is your only option and it's going to happen again and again and again, I want you over the winter to rig up some sort of temporary guard, something you can put around your garden, even just butcher paper wrapped around the outskirts of the garden to physically deflect any chemicals that are applied.
And when do you think, like, I have a cucumber that's ripe now, but since it was only sprayed a week ago, I'm thinking I have to throw that out.
No. The danger is really to the plants, not so much to you.
Okay.
So yeah, when people spray herbicides, the danger is not in any food, because any food that gets a lot of it is not going to be viable. The plant's just going to die and it's going to be pretty obvious. The danger is largely to the people doing the spraying and the people who then walk on that area with bare skin. And of course, to the health of the plant itself. The food value is like the least problematic here. your health and the survival of your plants are the big issues.
And how long should I water this for? Like,
as long as you can get away with. As long as you can get away with, especially in your dry climate, the more water you can get in the soil, the more you can rinse those plants down, the more they will be able to fight back. So really saturate that soil, do the best you can, and keep your chin up.
All right. Well, appreciate it.
Okay, Carol. Good luck.
Have a great day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Kevin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. Hello.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing well.
And where is Kevin doing well?
New Bern, North Carolina.
Oh, how can you not do well there, right? In the little piece of heaven on earth.
Yes. It's a little warm this time of year, but other than that, everything is great.
All right. What can we do for Kevin in North Carolina?
Well, in the early spring, I planted 6 trees. I had a large area out back. I did some clearing in, and it was just full sun. And I don't know if I did everything right, but they took well, and they've been growing. But all of them, with the exception of one, I fertilized a few weeks after I put it in the ground. Somebody told me that was a mistake. I should have waited 1 year and let the roots get established. But I haven't had a problem with them. We've been getting plenty of rain, so I didn't have to water them too much. But my concern was, when the fall comes in, should I consider pruning any of these trees?
Oh,
none of our fruit trees.
Oh, no, 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 no. You can just, you know, we'll get to what kind of trees they are in a minute. But you should never prune anything in the fall.
Oh, that's
nothing.
Good to know.
Nothing, ever.
When they were dormant.
No, they're dormant. Well, in my neck of the woods up in Pennsylvania, they're dormant in the winter time. In the fall,
that's what I meant, winter.
In the fall, they're trying to go dormant, and pruning stimulates growth. So if your trees are not yet fully asleep, so to speak, for the winter, and you prune them, they have no option but to start growing again.
Okay.
And then if you get one of your rare cold snaps, all of that sap that you made go up into the plant freezes and you can kill the tree.
Okay.
Where you are, depending on what you have, I would suggest in the spring after they've been growing again for about 2 weeks. But what do you have and why do you think they need pruning?
I don't know they need pruning. I just thought maybe with help them grow faster or something like that. But I have a pin oak.
All right.
A river birch clump.
Oh, nice.
A red maple.
Mm-hmm.
And just for some color, I put a profusion crab apple out.
Oh, sweet.
Stellar pink dogwood.
Mm-hmm.
And a colza dogwood.
Yeah. Whoa, man. Kevin, the arborist here. You're getting a botanic garden going.
Yeah, trying to change a few things around here landscaping-wise.
Well, Kevin, that's the A-list. I'm very impressed with your choices. Those are spectacular trees. You're going to get an amazing display in the spring from that crab apple. And I'll tell you, any pruning you did in the winter would diminish the show in the spring.
Okay.
Because the crab apple will have set next year's buds by the time the fall rolls around. Crab apples aren't all that attractive after they're done flowering. So, so if over the years the tree starts to get a little crowded or you see it's growing too far in one direction, you can prune out entire branches after the flowers have completely faded and you won't lose a thing.
Okay.
The other trees are always going to look better if you don't prune them. The only pruning you would do on like a pin oak and that birch sounds amazing. What's the trunk look like on that puppy? It must be dramatic.
It is. It's a beautiful bark. And it's growing real well. It's only about almost approaching 20 feet tall now.
Whoa, man, you bought big trees.
It's fairly large size when I got it. It's grown a lot, and it's got a lot of rain, and I did put that fertilizer to it initially a few weeks after I put it in the ground.
Okay, good. I'm glad you reminded me of that. No more fertilizer. Trees don't need it.
No?
If you feel like you got to do something, you know, a couple shovelfuls of compost at their base every couple of springs. Okay. But you can certainly prune the crabapple to keep it under control. Wait till the flowers are done. But then with the other trees, I would suggest you only prune out dead or damaged wood. And if a branch is truly dead or heavily damaged, prune it out as soon as you notice that. And prune out the entire branch and go close to the tree, but don't cut into the bark of the tree. Leave that little collar attached to the tree. Just cut the branch off.
Okay, I know what you're referring to.
All right, Kev?
Okay, thank you so very much.
Great backyard. I'm envious. It's going to be a great yard.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, good man.
All right, thank you so much for the information.
Take care, Kev.
All right, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a quick question about, all right, long story short, I'm a beekeeper. And my girlfriend and I are moving out of our place in Trenton, and we're looking to, you know, get a house. And a big goal of mine was to bring bees to a little house that we have. But something I really wanted to do was pull grass out and plant, like, wildflowers and, like, kind of tame some weeds and wildflowers so the bees could have something to pollinate.
Right.
Would that greatly affect the soil of our land?
No. You know, lawns are monocultures. Unless they have clover in them, they're kind of useless for bees, although they are fun for us to roll around on and play frisbee on and sit out on it, you know, on a nice day. Now, I think, and you're talking Jersey to Jersey. You're a Jersey boy.
Yeah, so we're looking to live around the Trenton-Ewing area. Definitely a nice area to stay, affordable, and definitely some open space.
Yeah, yeah, you have Lawrenceville and Princeton not too far from you, right?
Yep, yep.
So here's the deal. Your thinking is great for native bees, but your honeybees are not native.
Nah, most likely when we get them, they're going to be coming up from Georgia.
No, I mean, their DNA is from Africa.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then they were domesticated in Europe for so long that some even entomologists will insist that there's a European strain of honeybees. But
yep.
But no honeybees are native to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And when you grow what's called a wildflower mix, you would want to make sure that your wildflowers would do well in Jersey and also not introduce any nasty species that could become endangered. But again, your honeybees are not necessarily looking for wildflowers. Again, that's your native bees. That's bumblebees and blue-faced bees and squash bees and carpenter bees and all the vast diversity of native bees that are native to New Jersey. They would go crazy for a native wildflower mix. But your bees, they'd certainly love to have some fruit trees to pollinate. They go nuts for those blooms. So I think you probably want to talk to the New Jersey Beekeepers Association to see what they plant. The first thing I might suggest, as long as you promise to wear shoes or sandals afterwards, is you could just seed a lot of clover into the lawn. And the bees would love the clover. Clover honey is fabulous. And it would help the lawn. Every time you cut the lawn, that clover would return a ton of nitrogen to the soil. So you'd make the lawn more ecologically sound, and the clover would persist for quite a long part of the season. Other than that, when we have done this research, if I remember correctly, what you want for your bees, in addition to some clover, are big blocks of colored flowers. Not like random wildflowers. You want square feet of flowers in almost every color but red. How weird is that?
Yeah, I guess they don't see red very well.
I guess not, because the recommended flowers are blue and then yellow and white. And no matter what lists I went to, I could not find any recommendations of red flowers. My honeybees, they're not my honeybees. They're somebody else's. They're coming to my house for free pollen. They're loving the violet flowers of the hostas. And, you know, when they tell you to plant big clumps of blue flowers, they say or violet or purple. So I think you know, you're thinking the right thing for native bees and pollinators, but yours are not native bees. So you want to give them what they're going to be happiest with. And, you know, unless you're going to lock them up in the hive, I don't keep bees, so I don't know exactly what you guys do with your bees over the winter. But the longer they can forage into the fall on nice days and have things in flower, and the earlier they can come out in the spring when the weather's nice and have things in flower, the hardier your colony will be.
Okay.
All right. That's some thoughts for you, Stevie?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that now is the time to treat your turf with the naturally occurring grub-killing product known as Milky Spore if you had bad Japanese beetle troubles this summer. The little beast sure ravaged my personal roses because the babies of those beetles are about to be eating the roots of your grass. But don't go looking for all the details under Milky Spore in the A to Z Garden Answers section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with Yellow Jackets, honeybees, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. And we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to a very important question of the week. Yellow insects flying in and out of a hole in a wall could be yellow jackets. They're dangerous. Or they could be an escaped colony of honeybees, which are precious. We'll tell you how to tell the difference between these similar-looking insects and what to do with the ones you got after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Dave, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Glad to talk to you. Been listening to you for about 20 years.
I've only been on the air for 17, so you must own a good time machine there, Dave.
Yep, about 20 years. Very good.
Where are you, man?
I'm in Yardley on the Delaware, Pennsylvania.
Yes, yes, very nice. What can we do for Dave in Yardley, PA?
I've got a small crop of sunflowers underneath my bird feeders on both corners of my north-facing house, and I'm wondering if how to harvest the seeds and use them next year.
Okay, so
lengthy.
So are these spontaneous? These are from seed that the birds and evil squirrels have kicked onto the ground?
Yes, loads of them.
And the plants are, they're not ready yet, right, Dave?
A couple have started to die and look ugly, so I took them down, but the seeds don't seem to have matured yet.
Well, and are they big? I mean, are they the big-headed oil sunflowers? These are massive plants.
I've got some that are 6 inches across, and the average is 2 to 3, 4 inches.
The reason I ask is there are hundreds of types of ornamental sunflowers that have been bred, and many of those are smallish plants. And they do develop seeds, but the seeds are nothing like the sunflower seeds that we're used to for bird seed and baseball games and all of that. But underneath a feeder, you would be getting what they call mammoth black Russian oil sunflowers. Did the heads turn to face the sun during the day?
Yes, they did.
Okay. So, you know, typically those are a long season crop, though, man. Typically they, you know, at the end of the season in like September or something is when you have to bag the heads to protect them from the birds eating them right there.
Okay.
Now, that is one of your options, Dave. If you are feeding birds and the sunflowers are doing okay, you can just leave them right where they are, and then you'd be improving your method of feeding birds. There are now groups in the Humane Society who are suggesting not to feed birds from seed feeders in the summer because the fear of the newborn chicks will only know that way of getting food when there's so much seed in the wild. And they're asking people to, you know, limit their feeding to with suet in the winter and the early spring. But if you have sunflowers with seeds in them, that's absolutely perfect. I can tell you that's what I did when I grew them, is they were in the back of my garden. I would leave them be, and then I would just start to notice when the seeds would disappear, and then I'd start keeping an eye out. And then I'd see all different kind of birds coming. And to a bird, they would sit on the top of the sunflower head and eat the seeds upside down, pecking away.
Okay.
And it was lots of fun. And even the ornamental sunflowers, the ones that were only a foot or two tall, I had so many finches, like goldfinches, coming and just having a ball. And it was a great way to watch them. And that's an incredibly safe way to feed, because this was a big year for us at our house. We had 4 different nests actually on the house at the tops of various gutter runs and on top of an air conditioner in my daughter's old bedroom. We had robins nesting up there. We had vireos out the back. We had wrens in the front of the house. And the vireos in the back were right outside our bedroom window. So we had like a straight-up bird cam. We watched the whole progression, including the baby birds. And,
nice.
Yeah, it was just amazing. And you can realize, okay, when they go get their first meal, you want them going to plants.
And yes, plants and insects, right?
Yeah, okay. And digging the seeds out themselves. So there are ways for people who grow sunflowers who want to save them for themselves. That, you know, what you do is when the plant dies, you put a paper bag over the head so the birds don't get the seed. Then you let it dry outside till the first frost and bring it in and you work the seeds out. But I think it would be more fun to have living bird feeders outside.
Yeah, it would be. I'd like that better, yeah. Thanks, Mike.
All right, good luck, Dave.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Me too. You take care, sir.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jim, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for being had, Jim. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Marion Station, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia.
I know it well, named for the train station in Marion Station.
Exactly, yes. Oh. Beautiful area. We love it here.
Yes, yes. All right. What can we do for Jim in Marion Station?
Well, my wife and I moved here we moved into Marion Station about 2 years ago. There were a couple crepe myrtles. They're right outside our house, and they were beautiful last year. This year, we've noticed that the top of the crepe myrtles, I leave town quite often, and when I'm gone, there's a mosquito shield company that comes in and sprays all of our plants and our crepe myrtles. I don't know if they just don't like them or not, but they have like this moldy, sticky substance on the top of the crepe myrtles, and the rest of the crepe myrtles look fine. But I'd say from halfway down, it's fine, but halfway up going to the top, it looks like mold is growing on my crepe myrtles.
So what are they spraying?
They're spraying. It's interesting you say that, because my wife, we're expecting a child in December, so of course my wife is worried about the Zika virus.
I'd be more worried about the spray.
Yeah, well, it's the all natural garlic.
Okay, yes. Generally, when these companies got started a few years ago, Mosquito Patrol, Mosquito Shield, Mosquito Joe, they all sprayed permethrin, which is a synthetic form of a botanical insecticide that comes from a chrysanthemum flower. And the problem with those sprays is they're toxic to humans, and they killed off a lot of beneficial insects. So over the years, we've learned that garlic oil sprays are very good at chasing mosquitoes away, not killing them like permethrin, but just making the place less habitable. There are also botanical mixtures these people are spraying now that are, you know, they're safe. They're safe for your wife and everything like that. Now, in terms of the Zika virus, I don't know if you heard our special show on mosquitoes. You can go back and listen to the podcast. But there are things you can do on your own property using water and a natural substance called BTI that'll protect you a lot better than these sprays. And if she's going outside in the summer and she's using repellents, you should know that Repel's lemon eucalyptus mosquito repellent is now CDC approved, and it's been found to be as effective as DEET without any of the chemicals going into her bloodstream.
Got it. Okay.
So what you have on your crepe myrtles is you have aphids up there. Crepe myrtles that are struggling for one reason or another are very prone to aphid infestations. Now, how tall are your crepe myrtles?
Oh, boy. They're getting pretty tall. They're about 6 feet now.
Oh, no, that's short for a crepe myrtle.
Okay.
So what you do, if you have good enough garden hose pressure, you just get your garden hose, get a nozzle that you can set to a laser beam setting, and just spray those areas at the top of the crepe myrtles that are affected every morning. Really blast it, though. I mean, you really have to see the trees moving around. If you can't achieve that, use a power washer.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, and it'll knock all the aphids out. It causes like a 95% knockdown, and the ones that are left are really depressed. So that's the natural answer there. Now, are you pruning your crepe myrtles?
I was just going to ask you that. We're not pruning them.
You haven't pruned them ever?
We're gone a lot of the time. That's why when I was telling you, I'm gone for weeks at a time. I'm a plus-size model, and when I come back, the whole place is, we should probably hire somebody, but I should probably start pruning or doing something like that.
Don't prune randomly, but your crepe myrtles, you know that they flower in the summertime, and then they kind of go dormant over the winter. In the spring, when you see new growth appear, about 2 or 3 weeks after that, just give them a gentle haircut. Just take a foot off the top. That keeps them much healthier, and it improves the blooming show, and it'll keep them at a reasonable height.
Right, got it. Okay.
Do you have mulch piled up against these things?
We do, and I heard a couple weeks ago.
Get it out of there. Get it out of there.
I know. I heard you didn't like, and we actually have the dark mulch, the black mulch.
Right, which is.
When you said to get rid of mulch, we were.
Right. That's chipped up pallets from China that were soaked with insecticides and then spray painted black.
Oh, boy.
Just
it looks
because
so nice, though.
black compost will look just as nice, but get it
I'm sure.
Get it away at least from the trunks of the trees. Don't let it touch any plant.
Okay.
But it's leaching all sorts of nasty stuff into the ground.
Gee
and,
whiz.
And please don't feed your plants. You don't need to feed crepe myrtle trees.
No, we don't. It's a gorgeous Good. It's a gorgeous bush. It's just that moldy substance on it. Now that we know we can just wash it off.
Yeah. Well, you can shoot it off. Think about that. You want a real high pressure spray. Do that a couple mornings in a row and you'll be amazed.
Got it, Mike. Hey, you're the best.
I really
appreciate it.
Yes, I am, Jim.
And humble.
Yes.
All right.
That too. All right. Take care, man.
All right. See you.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Are lots of, quote, yellow flying insects honeybees, or could they be yellow jackets? Alexis Landis, get us started with this week's stinging question.
Sure, Mike. Sean in Alexandria, Virginia writes, you mentioned yellow jacket nests on a recent show, and I found the timing serendipitous as I just discovered, quote, bees living in a stone wall in my yard. I think they're yellow jackets, but have not wanted to get close enough to be sure. In any case, there's a lot of them, and they are yellow. How would you suggest I deal with these bees?
Well, first, I have to correct Sean and pretty much everybody else out there. Yellow jackets are in the wasp and hornet family, and they're not bees of any kind. What's the difference? In the bee family, pretty much only honeybees sting, and they don't like to sting because they lose their stinger and quickly die. Many members of the wasp family sting. Yellow jackets actually like to sting, and they can all sting repeatedly without any harm to themselves.
If his, quote, yellow insects were coming in and out of a hole in the ground, they'd definitely be yellow jackets, as you've explained that honeybees don't nest in the ground. But we've gotten lots of calls over the years from people with yellow insects going in and out of a hole in the side of their home who turned out to have an escaped feral or wild colony of honeybees, which are prized by beekeepers for their stamina.
And when we told Sean that those yellow flying insects living in his wall might be an escaped honeybee colony, he responded, I know that the bee population has been struggling, and I don't want to wipe out a colony if they're not yellow jackets.
Good man.
All right, now, both types of insects live in very large colonies. A big yellow jacket nest can contain thousands of those aggressive wasps. But a honeybee hive can house tens of thousands of these hugely important pollinators. Both insects are yellow with black markings. But yellow jackets are a brighter, shinier yellow. They're hairless and they have that famously distinctive wasp-like waist. Honeybees are fatter, less brightly colored, and they look kind of fuzzy. Yellow jackets are also much more likely to just come after you, while honeybees aren't aggressive unless you approach their hive. Now, if honeybees you have, contact your local beekeepers association to see if somebody wants to come out and possibly move the hive, which they would probably do in late fall or early winter.
Or you could just leave them alone and enjoy the benefits of their pollination. And for potentially a long time. Unlike yellow jackets and other wasps, honeybees will continue to use the same nest year after year.
Yeah, but let's be clear that you need to call for the beekeepers if this nest is in the walls of your house. All those bees and their honey make a huge mess. But if they're dangerous and aggressive yellow jackets and they're anywhere near a home, the nest must be destroyed immediately. But despite what so-called experts will tell you, poisonous insecticides are not a good choice for this. They just don't work.
Right. As you've warned many times over the years, insecticides can't penetrate the complex structure of the nest.
Instead, wait until the cool of late evening or dawn when any nest guards are going to be absent or sluggish. Just to be safe, take a can of a cooking oil spray like Pam along with you and spray any wasps that come near you. Oil sprays are highly effective against single insects. Then,
if the nest is in an open, easy-to-access flat area, just place a heavy glass bowl over the hole. They can't dig a new way out and will cook inside the nest over the next week or so.
but if the nest entrance is in a more complex area, place the hose of an old canister vacuum cleaner nearby. Again, when the air is cool and the yellow jackets are sluggish, but wait to turn it on until you have a clear exit path. In fact, the preferable way to do this is to have the machine already turned on, but not yet plugged in. Then you can start it up from a distance using that plug or an extension cord. Either way, the wasps will attack the noisy machine and be sucked inside. When you see no more yellow jackets, cover the hose end with duct tape before you turn the machine off, and then let it sit out in the sun for a couple of days.
That's your preferred method. You've gotten rid of 4 or 5 nests over the years with a beat-up old canister vacuum.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I just love watching them fly up to that hose. They hover for a second and then zip, they're gone.
You can do essentially the same thing with one of those bug zappers sold to kill mosquitoes. Put it in position, turn it on from a distance, and the wasps will attack the buzzing intruder until they're all zapped.
And don't worry about the actual nest in the ground or in a wall. It won't be reused by future yellow jackets. They always start a fresh nest in the spring. Well, that sure was some helpful flying insect ID information now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes! My producer is threatening to kick my hornet's nest if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse steaming towards our garden shore. At garden@whyy.org. Please, please, please include your location, especially if you are certain that we do not need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location. Ah, but where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you were about to email us, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar keep our website buzzing. Mad as a hornet, Al Banks is our editor. Hardworking as a honeybee, Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our intern, Emma Bixler, has not stung a single person at the station yet. I'm aggressive when disturbed, Mike McGrath. And if you're not careful, I'll fly into that open can of soda you just put down before I see you again next week. Lilacs are lovely, demanding, easy to grow, and or misunderstood. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss how to care for, or leave alone, the plants that bring us that wonderful scent of spring. Or don't. Plus your fabulous phone calls.